Born on this day in 1951, Jimmy Jameson, lead singer of Survivor for a good portion of their career, not the lead singer on Eye of the Tiger. That's Dave Bickler. Dave Bickler went to my high school, Bennett Academy, in suburban Chicago. It also would go on to be the voice of the Real Men of Genius ads for Bud Light. Jimmy Jameson joined after Eye of the Tiger and sang on songs like This One, High on You, and The Search is Over, Burning Heart. That's all Jimmy Jameson. He died at the age of 63 in 2014 of a heart attack. Good voice. Also co-wrote the theme to Baywatch, if you care about things like that. Jimmy Jameson from Survivor, born on this day back in 1951, we hear High on You. Scott Bertram sitting in for Steve here on the Steve Gruber Show. And pleased to be joined by Michael Munger, professor of economics at Duke University, senior fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research. He's got a piece at AIER.org for Most Things Recycling Harms the Environment. Michael, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be on the show.
Michael, I've been thinking a lot about this question because here in Michigan, we have a bottle deposit law, which you might know, and then we do have curbside recycling service, but our service, at least here in Hillsdale, keeps cutting back what they accept. They stop taking glass, they stop taking cardboard, they stop taking all sorts of stuff, and it made me start to really think about how that whole process works, and is it worth it, and that's when I stumbled upon your piece. It was perfect timing. What are you writing about here in the piece?
Well, it's hard to make it simple because I'm not saying people shouldn't recycle. In fact, I'm an avid recycler. Every time I drive my car to work, at the end of the day, I come out and I drive it home. I don't throw it away. So there's all sorts of stuff like that. I wash my clothes instead of throwing it away. The question is, should we reuse stuff because there's a law, not because it makes sense economically, but should we reuse stuff or try to recycle because there's a law? And the bottle deposit rule is a perfect example. The difficulty that we have is there's always two motivations. One is we think this stuff is valuable. And the other is we don't want it to get thrown by the side of the road or thrown into the landfill. And we often muddle those two together. So what I try to do in the article was parse those two out and keep them separate and ask for a lot of recycling, particularly kind of suburban recycling. You know, downtown, if you want to have places where you throw a bottle after you're walking and you finish, if you're in Detroit, in the downtown, you throw it away when you're finished drinking, fine. That operates at scale. But you've got little trucks that go around suburban neighborhoods in Grand Ledge, one of my favorite towns, by the way, so a shout out to Grand Ledge. And they're picking up like a shovelful of recycling at each place. And the question is, does it make sense? And my answer is, for the most part, no.
You write about three things have to be true for coercive or social recycling to make sense. You kind of just mentioned scale there. But convenience is two. And I was just talking about it. It's amazing how many things are match up with what you write. I was just talking about this with someone where, you know, recycling works in part because we're all deputized to do part of the labor. If we expected a certain business to clean and sort, it would change the economics completely about what recycling is it worth it or not. And so then we ask, what is our time worth? Time we can't get back. Is it worth our time in the end to do all these things?
Well, that's what's so frustrating is the city will say it's not worth their time, so you should do it.
Right.
Well, I would rather have some people who are being paid because that's their job. They're trying to do it at scale. You know, you've got these big commercial washers, but it doesn't make sense economically to do that. It makes even less sense. I'm not making this up. I know people who run their garbage through the dishwasher.
Oh, my goodness.
So, like mayonnaise jars.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be clean. It's sort of a hassle. So they'll fill the top shelf with mayonnaise jars, tomato sauce, and they'll run it through the dishwasher. And then they feel virtuous because they put it out there in the little bin, and it's clean. Good Lord.
Michael Munger with us, professor of economics at Duke, senior fellow American Institute for Economic Research. This piece at AIER.org for Most Things Recycling Harms the Environment. The third test is environmental savings. You make a point that was first driven home to me, goodness, 15 years ago in an episode of Penn & Teller's BS show of the full name I can't say, where they made this point about landfill space. We are not. You keep hearing we're out of landfill space. We're running out of places to put garbage. We're not running out of landfill space, are we?
Well, if you fly across the United States at night and look down, there appears to be a whole bunch of places where there are no lights.
Yes.
And so Australia is also worried about this problem. Australia is about as big as the United States and has a 30th of the population. And so I often give talks down there, and they'll exactly the same canard, the same fib. We're running out of landfill space. Here's what happened. In the 90s, there were a lot of little landfills that operated badly. They were leaking, and they needed to be closed. So what happened is the EPA, and I think rightly, quite rightly, this is one of the things the EPA did right, said, you have to close all these landfills. So what happened is most of the landfills closed. That's true. But what didn't happen is that we ran out of landfill space. We opened one new landfill that was safe, that had a barrier below. Landfills have to do three things. They have to have a barrier below so there's no leakage. Mm-hmm. They have to have a cap above so you can manage the methane. And the third thing is to manage the leachate, the liquid that is a result of the decomposition of these materials. If you do those three things, you're way ahead. So what happened was we opened one new landfill that did those three things, and it was as big as 20 of the old landfills. So we have right now, right this second, we have more landfill space than we have ever had. So we're not only not running out, we have more than we've ever had. It's just crazy.
You say near the close of the piece, Michael, lately the cost of the symbolic act of recycling, particularly for glass, has simply gotten too large. Cities and other local units were willing to, for a long time, to sell their customers the chance to feel good about themselves as long as the costs were reasonable, but a general decline in recycled commodity prices. As I mentioned, glass was just taken out of the curbside in my area. What is it about glass that makes it so unprofitable or not worth recycling? And then very quickly, too, if you could, where do you see this going in the next 2 to 3 years if these conditions continue?
Well, the thing is that China has stopped accepting a lot of our recycled material, and so the prices for commodities have all plummeted. You said that the company has stopped accepting it. What that means is there's no way that they can sell this stuff.
Right, right.
So the problem with glass is, I said it had to be profitable or it had to harm the environment for recycling to make sense. There's no market for what's called cullet or recycled glass. And glass is sand. You break it up, it's inert. It does no harm to the environment. So the reason why it makes no sense to do glass is that it solves neither of the two problems. It's not profitable and it's not harmful to the environment. It's sand. Put it in the landfill.
Right.
What's going to happen in the next few years? I think we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that a lot of people see recycling not as something that creates money. It actually is a sacrifice. I care about the environment, so I'm willing to sacrifice. Well, good for you. But we can't give them the opportunity to force the rest of us through statutes and laws to say you all have to act this way. And the reason is, paradoxically, the environment. I actually care about the environment. I don't want those little trucks driving around,
yes, yes,
creating pollution. So if you care about the environment, don't recycle glass.
Michael Munger, professor of economics at Duke. I'll give the link again after the break. For most things, recycling harms the environment. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Need a new approach for your health issues? Are you sick and tired of being tired and sick? Well, Wyckoff Wellness in East Lansing offers IV Energy Boost infusions, ozone infusions, ultraviolet blood irradiation, chelation, plus IV vitamin, mineral, and nutrient treatment. Buy a package of 5 infusions or treatments this month and save big with discount pricing. IV therapies can help improve energy, treat chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, autoimmune diseases, Lyme disease, cancer, and more. Find out more at WYCOFFwellness.com or call 517-333-7270.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food, we've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food.
Cha-ching. You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, Rethink your behaviour. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Opioid addiction can affect anyone, any neighbourhood, any day.
It happened to me.
I'm recovering.
I lost my son.
One in four patients on long-term painkiller therapy struggles with addiction. But together, we can stop the cycle and end this deadly epidemic. Learn more at michigan.gov/stopoverdoses. Sponsored by the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.